Winter in Madrid by C.J. Sansom, read by Simon Russell Beale. Prologue. The Jarama Valley, Spain, February 1937. Bernie had lain at the foot of the knoll for hours, half conscious. The British battalion had been brought up to the front 2 days before, rattling across the bare Castilian plain in an ancient locomotive. They had marched by night to the front line. The battalion had a few older men, veterans of the Great War, but most of the soldiers were working-class boys, without even the officer training corps experience that Bernie and the smattering of other public school men possessed. Even here, in their own war, the working class stood at a disadvantage. The Republic had held a strong position, on top of a hill that sloped down steeply to the Jarama River Valley. In the far distance, the grey smudge of Madrid was visible, the city that had withstood the fascists since the general's uprising last summer. Madrid, where Barbara was. Franco's army had already crossed the river. There were Moroccan colonial troops down there, experts at using every fold in the ground as cover. The battalion was ordered into position to defend the hill. Their rifles were old, many did not fire properly, and there was a shortage of ammunition. They had been issued with French steel helmets from the Great War that the old soldiers said weren't bulletproof. Despite the battalion's ragged fire, the Moors slipped gradually up the hill as the morning advanced, hundreds of silent, deadly bundles in their grey ponchos, appearing and disappearing again among the olive trees, coming ever closer. Shelling began, the yellow earth around the battalion positions exploding in huge fountains to the terror of the raw troops. Then in the afternoon, the order to retreat came. That night, the battalion survivors crouched exhausted in an old sunken road. In the morning, the Russian staff commander ordered the remnants to advance again. Bernie saw Captain Wintringham arguing with him, but the Russian was adamant. The men were ordered to line up, huddling against the lip of the sunken road. The fascists had begun firing again with the dawn, rifle cracks and the stutter of machine guns. Standing, waiting for the order to go over, Bernie was too tired to think. The phrase, "fucking done for," went round and round in his head, like a metronome. Wintringham led the charge himself and went down almost at once with a bullet to the leg. Bernie winced and jerked as bullets cracked around him, watching the men he had trained with collapse with howls or sad little sighs as they were hit. 100 yards out, the desperate urge to fall and hug the ground became too strong, and Bernie threw himself behind the shelter of an old olive tree. He lay against the gnarled trunk for a long time, bullets whining and cracking around him, looking at the bodies of his comrades, blood turning the pale earth black. He twisted his body, trying to burrow as deep as he could into the ground. Late in the morning, the firing ceased, though Bernie could hear it continuing further up the line. To his right, he saw a high, steep knoll covered with scrubby grass. He decided to make a dash for it. He had almost reached cover when there was a crack and he felt a stinging blow in his right thigh. He spun over and hit the earth. He could feel blood trickling down his trousers. Using his elbows and his good leg, he crawled towards the shelter of the knoll, his old arm injury sending pain lancing into his shoulder. Another bullet made earth spit up around him, but he made it to the knoll. He threw himself into the lee of the little hill and passed out. When he came to, it was afternoon, and the warmth of the day was receding. He had fallen against the incline of the hill and could see only a few feet of earth and stones ahead of him. He was conscious of a raging thirst. He could hear a bird singing in one of the olive trees, but also a murmur of distant voices somewhere. They were talking Spanish, so it must be the fascists. He drifted in and out of consciousness. Still, he could hear the murmuring voices.